Step into your private luxury premium blocked party episode. The content you can only get by giving us your money. Look at you, you're such a big time. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another bonus edition of Blocked Party. This is the Canadian Education Program for Foreign Podcasters 2. This is the show where we bring on a foreign piece of scum and introduce them to a piece of Canadian pop culture that we know and we love. And this month we have one of our absolute favorites on the show. She is the co-host of What a Time to Be Alive and Lie, Cheat, Steal. Kath Barbadoro is here. Hi, Kath.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
We're thrilled to have you. We decided we were going to have you on the show. And we thought, you know, if we're having Kath on the show, what could we possibly introduce her to that would be sort of in her wheelhouse? And so this month we're talking about Stampede Wrestling, which is going to be great. And we obviously, producer Dan, a wrestling expert, he told us before the call, he has just an absurd amount of
did
wrestling.
Say seven,
stuff.
17 terabytes.
Yeah, I believe he said 19 terabytes of wrestling footage on various hard drives. So obviously Dan will be standing in as a wealth of wrestling knowledge, since Stefan and I, it's maybe not our.
I mean,
our
you thing. Know a bit more. I don't know anything about wrestling really, let alone the Stampede. So I learned a lot as well. I'm excited.
Okay. And then we thought, you know, we should also bring in a wrestling expert friend of ours to help us out, because, you know, Kath is obviously an American wrestling expert, but maybe doesn't know that much about Stampede. We thought we should also get a Canadian wrestling expert on the show. So we are thrilled to have our friend and yours. He is one of the co-hosts of the Twitch stream Wrestling Brain. Joshua Custodio is here. Hi, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, guys. It's, it's always nice to be known well by your friends. I've been on your program twice, once as a marijuana expert and once as a wrestling expert. So thanks for sort of introducing me to your listenership as a really smart guy.
A cool guy. We got you nailed down. Yeah.
Yeah. I got to say, not the most diverse range of interests. I feel like a lot of people who are experts in one of those are also experts in the other one. Yeah, there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah. The billions.
Yeah. Certainly, if you're like an adult wrestling fan, I would say. It's like wrestling fans are just like children or stoned adults.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Children or man and women children, basically, is who likes this stuff. But I'm excited to talk about this because, like, thank you for saying I'm an American wrestling expert. My wrestling knowledge is so, like, hyper specific and does not overlap with, like, the majority of wrestling fans' wrestling knowledge. So a lot of this stuff is new to me. And I was on a Twitch stream where they did, like, wrestling trivia, and it was clearly geared toward people who'd been into wrestling their whole life instead of a weirdo who got into it at like age 28, only watched things that were happening concurrently. So, like, yeah, I'm probably going to seem dumb on this, but I'm excited to be educated. That's what this is for.
Exactly. That's what it is for. You come here as a dumbass and we teach
an ugly American. Yeah.
That's what I write on my syllabus for my high school students too. You arrive as a dumbass, you leave as a genius. And that's really what we're all about. And Josh, I mean, that's sort of the whole point of Wrestling Brain too, that, you know, you guys are sort of the brain geniuses of wrestling, as it were.
Yeah, Zoobs knows everything. My co-host over there on Wrestling Brain. He's one of the smartest guys of all time. He sees through the business of pro wrestling like he's wearing damn X-ray goggles. So, yeah, but I know a lot about wrestling and I've been watching it my entire life, but I also can't remember anything. And I'm not into the style of fandom of much where it's like really minutia driven. I like the stories. I like the helicopter view. I like the overarching narratives. So as it pertains to the sort of nitty gritty of the history of Stampede Wrestling, you probably could have done better. But you know me, so here I am.
Well, I mean, we know Zoobs too, but we just assumed he'd be busy. Yeah, I mean, you know, just some education for our listeners in general before we get into this proper. Stampede Wrestling, if you're familiar with wrestling even a little bit, you probably know about Bret Hart and the Hart family of wrestling. So this is the wrestling promotion that their family owned. Stu Hart, the patriarch of the Hart family, owned. And this is shocking to me. Stampede Wrestling started in 1948. So Stu Hart started it originally as Klondike Wrestling, and he was sort of the territory guy in Western Canada and even into the Pacific Northwest. The NWA titles were frequently fought for in Klondike Wrestling. They changed the name to Big Time Wrestling, so it was Big Time for a while. And then in 1967, it finally got changed to Stampede Wrestling, and it remained that way for the rest of time until they sold the company in 1983 to Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon wasn't interested in too much to do with the company, but he did pilfer Bret Hart, the Dynamite Kid, and Davey Boy Smith, who you might know as British Bulldog, as WWF superstars at that time. He then consequently, 1 year later, sold the territory back to Stu Hart. So he literally basically just bought the whole thing to get three wrestlers. And then Stu was like, I think I want to run a promotion again in Calgary. It'd be great. And then Vince was like, okay, yeah, sure. You know what? You want to call it Stampede Wrestling? I don't give a fuck.
I have to assume that was a good Stu Hart.
It was an incredibly good Stu Hart impression. Yeah.
Bang on.
And then it ran again from 1985 to 1989, at which point it basically shut down for good. It got going again from 1999 to 2008, but wasn't nearly as big. I think when most people think of Stampede Wrestling, they think of that sort of late 70s to late 80s sort of time period. And Dan actually curated a list of matches for us to watch which if you are in the Discord, you would have had access to this playlist and maybe watch some of these matches. Dan, can you maybe talk a little bit about why you chose you gave us, I think, about 10 matches to watch here. What was sort of your rationale in putting this sort of collection together for us?
I have a DVD, like a 5-disc compilation of a bunch of old Stampede stuff. So I just picked some stuff that seemed, you know, interesting and particularly Canadian, like the helmet match, for example, is very Canadian.
So I just want to be clear. This is from your archives, but separate from the 19 terabytes. This is not included in that total.
No, this is included in that. Yeah.
Okay, this is included in the total. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, you, Dan, uploaded a bunch of these to YouTube. So if you can watch them now, it is directly thanks to him. He put these on here for us, And I'm glad there's like a further public archive of, the legacy of Stampede Wrestling for everyone.
Yeah. Now, Josh, as a wrestling fan, were you familiar with, I mean, obviously probably familiar with some of the players in some of these matches, but were you familiar with sort of Stampede in general before this?
So wrestling DVDs are such like a core part of the DNA of like how people would, or tapes before that, or like such a means of like sharing information, like pre-internet wrestling fan. And so for me, I wasn't tuning into Stampede Wrestling. I don't even know how familiar with like Stu Hart I was, but the Hart family is definitely something that I was incredibly aware of. The Hart family dungeon, their training school, notorious for its high difficulty and sort of torturous regiments. Familiar of all of that, but then when Bret Hart leaves WWF for WCW and the window in between, he puts out a DVD. And I think there's two or three, Dan, maybe you could correct me on this, but I think there's two to three Stampede Wrestling matches on this standalone Bret Hart DVD. So I had that DVD, and I think it was him and Dynamite Kid, that two to three falls match that Dan did share with us. And then a couple others, I think a singles with Owen. I think that was my first exposure to actually sitting down, hunkering down, and like laying eyes on Stampede Wrestling. But I do remember being impressed, and like its imprint on you know, Canada's national identity is like sort of silly at times, and Stampede Wrestling is serious as like a heart attack. And it went on to sort of be the DNA of what the wrestling world thought of Canadian wrestling. And so it's so opposite. Like, I don't know. I loved those two things that interplay with one another. And I remember distinctly remembering that being my first impression of Stampede.
Kath was nodding like she was going to talk, so I was leaving the floor open, and then I was like,
yeah, it was so interesting because it's like, it is this combination of, like, so as I said, I mostly watch modern wrestling, and I've gone back and I've watched some stuff from the past. Like, I used to have a a wrestling podcast called WrestleSplania, and sometimes go back and, you know, do an episode about, like, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat or something, and I would watch old stuff, but I don't watch a ton of stuff from this time period, and I really feel like wrestling is a lot like porno, where, like, I'm just desensitized to it now, and it's like, it's gotten more and more insane, and, like, this is like the equivalent of, like, 70s porno, where it's just like normal missionary sex, but people are freaking out because it's like they'd never seen anything like it. So a lot of this is like, there's one match in here where it's like a million leg locks. And the clip that we have of it, you hear the announcer, who I believe is Ed Whalen, who's great, we're going to talk about, says, like, we're 45 minutes in. And it's like, really? Like, just this? Just leg locks? But it's like, but the audience is super into it. And it's the moves are executed, like you said, with a great degree of sort of realism and seriousness. But then there's, I think almost every match on this has, like, a silly finish. Like, there is this incorporation of silliness into it, too. But it's taken deathly serious.
There's one ending in particular that I've been thinking about all morning. I'm sure you guys know which one I'm talking about, but I can't wait to get to it because it was incredible.
Well, we're not going to do the matches in order, Stefan, or anything like that. So you can just bring it up. Like,
it was the one where the British guy got absolutely curb stomped by. Is it Bruce Hart?
Yeah.
I mean, that was just so funny. It's very funny in wrestling. Like, I don't know much about wrestling, but I do know that it is funny when the ref gets attacked.
Yes.
You know, I think the ref is, like, usually the villain in most other sports, but, you know, you can't punch the ref in the head in hockey or basketball or whatever. So here you're allowed to, take your anger out on the ref. And I mean, that's what happened in this one. And also, so it was like the British guy, right? Foley, is that his name, or what was his
name? Yeah, I think they said his name was Foley, Bill Foley.
Maybe. Yeah.
Go ahead.
but he was, I feel like he was in, like, another match as well, like commentating or something. It was very,
maybe that was
a different British guy. But in any case, it was very funny seeing Bruce Hart, just beat the hell out of the British guy. I thought that was very good. And I mean, Ed Whalen, the announcer, I mean, he's worth the price of admission. Like, he's the best part overall.
Oh, it's
like,
J.R. So Foley. John Foley. J.R.
Yes.
Foley. Yeah.
Okay.
It was one thing I noticed too. It was very funny that you were talking about the sort of, like, what we would call a ref bump, which is where the ref gets hit and then, you know, they go down, they're rendered unconscious, and they don't see some form of illegal activity. One thing I really noticed about Stampede in particular is you can tell that it's sort of like the genesis of ref bumps, because they're all, like, they don't make sense. Like, there's one ref bump where the wrestler gets, I can't remember which match it was, but the wrestler gets slung off the ropes, and then the other wrestler sort of is standing in the ring, like, waiting for him, and for no reason at all the ref just stands directly beside him while the guy's, like, going into it, and he just, and so then the ref falls down. It's like, you know, I feel like it's like, I love your porno analogy, Kath. It's like the first cum shot, they just, like, missed the girl's, they missed her face. Like, it was just on her shoulder or something. Like, that's what it felt like to me. It was like, oh, this is just so clumsy. The ref bump is just,
I get what they were going for here, but
yeah. I mean, but you, I think just, I would have been more turned on if it was on her face.
Yeah. you didn't need as much to, like, get people worked up back then, and that's, like, pro wrestling, that's kind of the principle of it. Like, that is supposed to be what it's about, is getting the maximum amount of money from these unwashed idiots in the audience by doing as little as possible. Like, that is the goal. So, and that's sort of been lost in the age of modern wrestling, where it's like super athletic, super visual, super, like everything is turned up to 11. But like this stuff, it's very like, you tell a simple story. Oh no, the ref doesn't see the good guy's going to win, but he's turned around and then he turns back around and the bad guy wins and everyone gets mad. Like, you didn't need a lot. And that was super entertaining and still is. Like, it is timeless in some ways, but it's also, it just reminds me of how totally desensitized dudes doing 9 million flips makes me.
Kath, you're so right about, like, by today's standards, these matches are doing like, what, a quarter of like even like a medium, like the amount of the term work rate. I don't know if that's something that your listeners will know, but basically how many moves are happening.
No, they're all unemployed.
but not, okay, so they're doing less. The crowd is reacting more. And despite these sort of more boring matches, these flat finishes, there was not a single match we watched where I did not wish I was in the arena. These people are going bananas. They are buying in. And so much of that is birthed from, this is, you have to think, this is pre sort of the popularization of mixed martial arts or pro fighting. So people aren't as familiar with what like an actual fight looks like. Like, they might have seen one in public, but they have a small sample size for what two people locking up and fighting looks like. So there is this, not they thought it was real, but they were much, it was way easier to buy into like, oh, are these guys now actually mad at each other and fighting? Like, that switch hits in so many of these matches. And you see everything you would love to be part of, people grabbing their heads for somebody, like spilling to the outside gently. Or Stefan, you pointed out like how the furiousness, which, you know, Ed Whalen at one point, but the audience is like protective over their local referee. It's like, don't you fucking touch him. This is Calgary. And every single one of these arenas, I was like, get me the time machine. I don't care what's happening in ring. This looks like an absolute blast to be at, which is so funny because, and Kath, I think you know this, and Dan, you certainly do as well. The Hearts are not like a fun, adventurous people. They are stoics. They are, they are. Stu Hart thinks that pro wrestling is like more noble and more serious than actual fighting. Like, the art of being able to take pain over extension is greater. If you would have put one of his wrestlers, one of his students in with an actual fighter, the actual fighter would never be able to leave one of his students. He was a madman like that. So to see that that creates these like raucous, and I'm sure we'll get to it. And the reason that Stampede ends up shutting down is a riot. Like, that is what brings this company to its knees. And it all is this extension of this like flatlined energy family. It's so interesting.
I didn't know about the riot ending things. I was not aware of that. So I would like to hear some more about that if we could get into that.
Yeah, I tried to find some footage of that, but I wasn't able to.
So basically it's brought up like very briefly in the Wikipedia entry, but essentially there was a riot that broke out in a six-man tag match. And Ed Whalen became distraught during the riot in which a woman was trampled, and it caused him to quit Stampede on air. And he said that we're starting to scare the patrons with this violence outside the ring, and I will not be associated with it anymore. He was back 3 years later, but he did actually quit for 3 years, which is a long time in the wrestling business.
I think this is the difference between Canadian wrestling and American wrestling, is if that happened in America, the announcer would do that, but it would be a storyline to sell more tickets. It would be we're the threat of real violence. And that is what people would come for in America. Yeah. Like, cause there are wrestlers that kind of bring that energy now, and they're huge draws. I think there's this deathmatch wrestler named Nick Gage who really has this energy of like literally anything can happen. It can't. He's pretending, but it has that like vibe. And yeah, I feel like that's the market difference, is nobody in American wrestling is taking an ethical stand about how the audience is treated ever.
Well, and it's so funny because it was actually like internal strife within Stampede Wrestling. The reason this riot broke out was this escalating booking of, we need to get more extreme, we need to get more hardcore, we need to, you know, get the fans, you know, they were, you know, like happens with not just wrestling, but so many things, so many art forms. The peak, they're exiting the peak, and everyone's still addicted to this hot period. And they go, okay, what do we do? We just need to do the one hot thing to get back to where we were. And then we can get back to the plateau and we can get back to things that make sense. And so this angle that we're talking about is, you know, there is women getting attacked in the weeks leading up on Stampede Wrestling. You know, like you say, the rules are being broken left and right. And these raucous hillbillies that they are trying to tease, they happen to have this honorable code, and there is pushback within the neighborhood. And yeah, it ends up bringing the Federation to its knees. Now, it was sort of on life support already, you know, wrestling sort of moving away from the territory system, Calgary not being really anywhere that people were traveling, not able to draw tourists. But yeah, it was them trying to pull the trigger on a hot angle and destroying their own company and in the process. Truly great.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, I didn't really know any of that. That's why we have you on the show, the wrestling brain, Josh Custodio, filling in the gaps where we don't have any, but where we don't have any knowledge. But yeah, it definitely seems like when you have this whole promotion that's sort of built around subtlety, it's like you can't just all of a sudden, you know, flip a switch. Like, that's, and we were kind of talking about that with these matches, like, what was really getting to me, and I think Josh, your point about it sort of looking like what you think a real fight might look like we know now, like, I think a great example of this is like the Undertaker. So like the Undertaker in the last sort of 5 years of his wrestling career sort of took on this persona as like guy who watches MMA, so he knows how to do MMA holds. He cut such an imposing figure. He's a 6'10 guy. He started using the Kimura as a finisher in wrestling matches. Well, the version of the Kimura he does, if you've ever seen a Kimura properly applied in life, it just doesn't look anything the same, where you would go like, okay, this is clearly a fake hold. But yes, in 1979, like, you don't know what an abdominal stretch looks like, or, you know, or a leg lock, or like, it's very easy for you to make the leap to like, whoa, that guy's in real pain. Especially the thing that really got me was the sort of escalations of it, which like you sort of see in wrestling now, but not where it's like, you know, it'd be like, oh, he's caught him in the abdominal strain. And then they just do this very overacted, like, ooh, I'm pulling on it a little bit harder. And the audience going like, whoa. Oh, he's cinching it in. He doesn't care about this man.
I think the other thing like, really is got me. People were much stupider back then, too.
Also that.
Yeah. Yeah. That also got me for sure. And I think, too, seeing just the way the crowd reacted, even like there was one match, I think it was Dynamite Kid and Bret Hart, where the action spilled under ringside and like one of the fans at ringside was like, to Dynamite, like, hey, don't leave Bret alone. Like, he's, you know, this is it's crazy what you're doing right now.
Well, and I was hoping maybe to be able to get more into the actual matches. Like when I was watching them, I was like, maybe there's going to be like a hidden gem in here. And I think in the Dynamite Kid Bret Hart match that you posted, Dan, Kath, I see you nodding. Did you enjoy this one as much as I did? Now, I think it was a 2 out of 3 falls match that we only watched like the back 20 minutes of. Do I have that right? I think.
Yes.
I think that's right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. We watched the last fall.
Got it. I thought that's what was going on. I thought that, I don't know if this is a credit to the Dynamite Kid or a non-pink and black Bret Hart, but I actually thought this played as a bit more of a modern match to me. I don't know if maybe I was just looking for it. It's like, okay, what's the gem here? But I'm not saying this could have slotted on to like AW Dynamite this week or anything, but I thought that this was like a nice sort of show of where wrestling might go. Because John, you talked about how it is trying to, and certainly if Stu Hart's getting his way, the way he's training these wrestlers is, we want this to look as real as possible. When people are, you know, which is so stupid when you think, like, nothing, when I say Irish whip, you know, when in wrestling, when they grab the guy's arm and they send them and the guy runs to the corner, it's in every wrestling, there's nothing, you'll never see that happen in real life. Somebody grabs your arm and pulls you, you don't go running. And yet there's like this obsession with like, oh, you couldn't possibly punch a guy in the face because people know what that looks like and then they'll think it's fake. And there's still like, that's very still alive in wrestling. But I did think that this match was like, oh, they're flowing with one another. There's counters to counters. And I was like pleasantly surprised. I mean, that's a match from, I think it was 74. And, you know, not that Bret Hart isn't one of the greats. And I don't think I'm telling anybody anything they don't know, even the less wrestling inclined, that he's like well respected and well regarded amongst wrestling. But I was genuinely impressed by that match. And I thought that it was, that's the direction the company should have gone more in.
Yeah.
You talking about the Irish whip reminded me of one time I was at this show. Wrestling fans might know about this. It was the first New Japan Pro Wrestling show in Madison Square Garden, and it was a combined card with Ring of Honor. And there was a lot of unevenness. The New Japan parts were really great and the Ring of Honor parts were terrible.
Can I jump in for 1 second?
Yes.
I once heard that show described as a Michelin star chef being first forced to serve a meal alongside Taco Bell. And I thought that that was like the perfect way to describe that show.
It was very weird, like the tonal shifts. But there was one part where a bunch of Ring of Honor wrestlers planned this like run-in, like a fight. And like Enzo Amore was there. It's a whole thing. Basically, the idea was people were unsure if this was a planned thing or if this was this guy bum rushing the stage because he had done that before. And the conversation basically went to, well, there's an Irish whip in it. So this clearly was planned because no one is doing an Irish whip in a real fight. Like, that was the telltale move that they like, even wrestling brain, even when you're trying to make it look as realistic as possible, you can't get out of that thing of like, oh no, you Irish whip a guy. That's what happens.
I go for a jog now. He grabbed my wrist. That's what happened.
There had to be someone in like the late 70s who was trying that. Who was like, oh yeah, this is, you know, like this is how you manage to like grab hold of a guy's arm in a bar fight and you like tried it and you're like, wait a minute, what's happening
what
here?
What am I doing?
I think my favorite like move overall was Andre the Giant just like using his big ass to hit people.
That was a delight.
That was incredible. So it was also very funny because Ed Whalen called it the Battle Royal, which I think is a very Canadian way of referring to it.
Yes.
But it was a battle royale with how many wrestlers? Like a dozen?
I think they said
probably?
13.
13? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the winner, the prize changed. Did you guys notice that?
Yes.
When the match started, he said the winner of the match got $5,000. And then you can actually hear him on mic going, oh, the winner gets 2,000? Okay, yeah, so it's 2,000. And then he says later on, the winner of this battle royal gets $2,000.
That rocks.
But Andre the Giant, he won, obviously. But there were just multiple times where his big move, they were just like very basic moves, but it was just that he was doing it to more people. He wasn't doing it to one person. He was doing it to two or three. But yeah, my favorite move was still when he would get a guy in the corner and then turn around and just slam them with his giant ass repeatedly. And is that like, was that, I don't, again, I'm not a big wrestling fan. I don't know wrestling, but was that like a typical Andre the Giant wrestling match? Like, is that what he would do? Just like use,
well,
just like squish
much.
People? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's not like flipping just did around. That.
Okay. Yeah.
But that is to say, Stefan, if you were to live out a wrestler's life, if you were like, oh, I'm going to go play pretend, I'm going to go be in fake fights, Andre the Giant is the guy you want to be. Like, everyone is instructed. Yeah. Anytime this man touches you, you go soaring, old boy. Like, he could barely walk. He's selling the tickets. Like, it looks like an absolute blast to be Andre the Giant in a battle royal. Three guys, like, hugging at your leg and you swat them like flies. It looks incredible.
It was
that
great.
Was actually, when he was, like, still... He was still mobile at that time too. Like, he was throwing drop kicks and stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he had so way sick. Worse matches than this that people were.
Yeah,
doing
like
the
this
same
was shocking to me because I remember thinking to myself, because obviously, yeah, like lots of people are familiar with Andre the Giant, even if they know nothing about wrestling. And one of the main things is like, yeah, he basically just. His body just essentially gave out on him because he refused to get treatment for his megalopathy, or that's not the right word, megalomaly, but like megalomaly. Acromegaly. There we go.
Hey.
I knew I was in there somewhere, you know. I had Incubus sort of. Going to megalomaniac was going in my head there. But yeah, so all you know is he basically, he refused to take medication. He just essentially let himself die. And towards the end of his career, he could like barely walk. He was in pain all the time. So when I saw that Dan had posted this match from 1979, I was like sort of excited because I was like, oh, cool. Andre the Giant's in this battle royal. And this is like about 6 years or so before his like very publicized sort of body breakdown. And he was like maybe 5% more mobile than he was in his supposed body breaking down
it is
career.
Absolute prime.
Yeah. So it was just like, so that part of it was a bit bizarre. Cause I think I had, you know, cause anytime you hear about him or you watch a documentary about him or whatever, you sort of hear this talk of, you know, like for such a big guy, he was a freak athlete or whatever. And I'm like, I mean, and maybe in that time, that is what a giant freak athlete looked like. But now that we're in this era of, you know, 6'8 LeBron James being able to do what he does, and 7 foot Joel Embiid, and, you know, 7 foot Nikola Jokic, and these guys, like, we know what big athletes are now capable of. Yeah. It's sort of like, oh, okay.
I just like, to me, like, as I said, I like the sort of more modern stuff that tends to be a little more athletic, but like, I just feel like the day that a huge guy that sucks can't like be an important part of pro wrestling is the day I lose interest. Like, I need, it is so important to just have a giant man. It's you just a tall asshole walking through a crowd to the ring is that's all you need. Like, if you're at a live show and you see someone that big, they don't need to do anything. You're just like, that is the biggest person I've ever seen, and it's awesome. And if a bunch of these other people who are objectively better at this thing than him are going to like team up to try, like little worker ants to try to like lift him and throw him out, that's great. Like, I don't need that guy to do anything. There are a ton of like really big imposing guys in wrestling now that are incredibly graceful and like, truly, like, guys, like, you know, I've seen like a 6'8 dude do like a 2 standing backflips in a row, you know, like, it's amazing what people can do now. But I do love the tradition of just the lumbering, like, totally ineffective guy that everyone is acting like is a monster. I think it's great. And this battle royal is like such a good, it's such a like classic example of this like classic battle royal format where you have one giant guy and everyone's trying to team up to get him out and then they can't. It's great.
I think there was a point where one guy just like left the there were four wrestlers left, and then the one guy was just like, all right, I'm out. And like the announcer was like, it looks like he just ran off, he's scared. And I love that, like, that, because that adds to the mystique, right?
Yeah, so exactly. Good. Yeah,
because it was also funny because nothing Andre did seemed real life dangerous. So that was the other thing too, is like, I could see it if Andre had like gotten the ring and all he was doing was just punching people, just boom, right. Boom, this 7 foot 400 pound, they said he was 7'8", 480 pounds, which also made me laugh. A great
lie,
amount.
Yeah.
That would be the largest person that ever lived. But he was just like, you know, if he had just come in right from the start of the match and all he's doing is just punching guys and they're getting knocked, then that's more believable to me than him kind of, like you say, Josh, is sort of shaking people off of his legs.
Right.
And then when it gets down to four guys left, he's already made it through 10 other people to get down to the final four. And he's like, oh shit, Andre's here, I'm gone. Like, that made him very hard.
Figuring out the game theory of it, where he's like, well, when there were more people in, we could have banded together and lifted him up. But now there's only three of us. We're sunk. There's no way we're getting this guy out.
Yeah.
Unless we trip him, something that could happen very easily that would end his life because he can barely move. That's the only way.
The other one that we mentioned, which is I think my favorite match, and it was very, very stupid, was the one with the two the football players, which is called the helmet match. And like the setup for it, it's very funny because like the setup for it is like one guy is like very scared and like doesn't want to do the helmet match. And then it immediately cuts to that guy just like wailing on the other guy with his helmet. It's so funny. So what the helmet match is, my understanding of it is these guys are both former football players. One guy played for the Oakland Raiders. One guy played for Georgia Tech, I believe.
Yeah.
Because what was his nickname?
Iron Mike Sharp.
Sharp Mike.
No, yes. But was it the Wreck from Georgia Tech or something? Or?
Yes, the Wreck from Georgia Tech. That's what it was. Yeah.
And so they're two football players and they wear football helmets and they're just like headbutting each other with the football helmets in the corner. I mean, it's just incredible. It's so stupid. I love it.
Stefan, I
that's
love
one
that
thing
you
that
start...
I did. Oh.
No, go ahead, Kat, please.
Or just that. That's one of the things I loved about all of these matches that you don't see anymore in general is there is so many headbutts because like now they don't do that because that's why Heart Dungeon graduate Chris Benoit murdered his whole family and himself because he did too many headbutts.
Yeah.
But, you know, in retrospect, they are really fun to watch. I get why he did so many of them.
Yeah, I'm not one of these cowards. I love headbutts in wrestling. I love when they get out there and just mash their skulls against one another. You can do it a couple times to get away with it. How much worse could it be than jumping, 10 feet in the air and landing on stuff? Could be that much worse, could it? We're talking about things we did like from Stampede Wrestling. Something I noticed that I would like to see other federations steal this, besides Ed Whalen, who is on fire throughout this promotion. When people are on the top rope in Stampede Wrestling, so everybody knows this wrestling trope, you go to the corner, you climb up, you look, you go for your move. These people are up and down that thing like their ass is on fire. They are like, they sprint up it, and it's like, do the move. Like, there's no teasing on the front. There's no, like, getting the balance. It is like, who knows how long that person's going to be down there. I am up this thing and down. And I thought, again, to that sort of, like, if you were to climb up something and jump on someone in a fight, you probably wouldn't throw your hands in the air, call for the crowd. I thought that was really cool. Can we talk a little Ed Whalen? Can I
say one more thing about the helmet match before we get to Ed Whalen? I don't know that much about wrestling. I am willing to bet this is the only example of a helmet match in history. And the absolute funniest fucking thing happens in the lead up to this. So Iron Mike Sharp has a manager and he's arguing with Jim Neidhart, who's the face because he's married to one of the members of the Hart family and his name ends in Hart. And he's like, he says something to Mike Sharp about like, you went to Georgia Tech or whatever. And the manager goes, you're bringing up his football career. Sounds like you're suggesting a helmet match. And I lost my, I'm like, this is not a match we've ever heard of in history. And he says it like everyone on earth is like, whoa, a helmet match. Oh my God. That part, I fucking loved it. That was so funny to me. It was just like that type of conversation would never happen in life. I just love it. It would be like if you were in a bar fight and someone was like, you want to take this outside? And you're like, oh, you want to run down the block? Sounds like you're suggesting a race to the stop sign.
But it's even weirder than that. And they do this in wrestling all the time. And it kills me every time. I think it's so funny where they will, they will suggest a type of match that has never been done before and not explain what it is. And the other guy's like, you're on. So it's like if you got a guy to go outside, but instead of being like, oh, this means we're going to race to the stop sign, it's like, oh, this means we're going to do the like triple hopscotch, like karate of death fight or something, like something that didn't exist. And the guy was like, yes, that's what we're going
to
do.
Yeah, right away. Gets, oh, you want to, you want a triple hopscotch karate fight to the death? Oh, baby. Yeah, let's go.
It is so bizarre. The one more thing I want to say about the helmet match too is, again, with the whole head injury thing, there is periodically, because wrestling is incredibly dangerous and like probably borderline unethical to enjoy because it is so bad for the people that do it, there are periodic conversations about the relative safety of wrestlers and whether certain types of wrestling should not happen. And every once in a while, someone suggests that wrestlers should wear helmets in the ring all the time. And now I have a thing to send to those people to be like, you don't want this. I promise you.
My favorite part about talking about this helmet match is John prefaced it with, I don't know that much about wrestling. And Stefan said, as I understand it, I have watched wrestling my entire life, this helmet match. What are the rules? Is anyone aware?
No, I think the rules are literally just you wear helmets so that allows you to do more headbutting, I guess. Like, I didn't really... there isn't really... none of it makes any sense. It's like when they used to do like blank on a pole match.
Yeah.
Like it would be like they'd put like a weapon on a pole, but from watching wrestling for years, there's weapons under the ring. You can bring a weapon to the, like, there's not, it's like you have to suspend your disbelief. It's like the only thing when they start a helmet match is like, for sure one guy's going to lose his helmet. That's what you know. That's all you need to know. You're just like, well, one of these guys is going to lose his helmet and the guy, or it's either that, or you just assume one of them is going to take it off their head and start hitting the other guy with it. You're like,
why wouldn't
one of
you?
Those two things is going to happen and that's it. So yeah, it was very funny to me. And also just the idea of it being a helmet. Like, I'm so mad at you. We've had this feud for months. You know what we should do? Let's have a fight with more safety equipment on. It's usually the opposite. It's usually the opposite. It's like, let's wrap the ring in barbed wire and bring in aluminum baseball bats and exploding tables. And he's like, let's put on safety equipment and fuck each other up. It was so good. But Josh, you want
right,
to talk
Mike
about
Sharp Jr. Let's tape pillows to our heads if you really mean it.
Yeah, Josh, Whalen's you want to talk Ed Whalen? Yeah, let's talk.
The pro wrestling announcer is such a part of the whole shebang, right? Like the person who's moving the action along, calling it. Not only their voice sort of creates like a Pavlovian effect of like, oh, they're getting excited, I'm getting excited. I'll look up from my phone for the first time in 13 minutes and glance at the television where wrestling is on it because the announcer's voice is ramping up. Ed Whalen can be placed among the absolute best at this, in my opinion. There's a part where I think it's Bruce Hart. He wants to add some stipulations. He wants to get this guy so bad that he wants next week's fight to not be on television because he doesn't want the crowd to hate him for what he's going to do. And yeah. Ed Whalen is so fed up at this point. He's so tired of the request. He's like, oh, you got a request? I got a request too. I want a microphone and it's this big with his arms 4 feet wide and it's this big and it's made of concrete. Get out of here. And it's just like, why don't we let the announcers have this level of personality now? I was like, oh, you got something to say? We all got something to say. It was just so offhanded. I thought that was truly great to me, that sequence.
He's excellent. Yeah, he's great. And he's calling, I can't remember, but I feel like in a lot of these, he's calling them by himself, right? Isn't he?
He is. Yes.
Soul? Yeah. And like, that is an incredible talent. People who can call wrestling matches well, because like, you know, I'm like very interested in this world. And like, if I were to be involved in wrestling in any capacity, it would be as some kind of commentator or something. And I've sort of thought about how to execute something like that and to have a consistent character and to make it exciting and to help people understand what's going on, which if you have multiple commentators, you have one person doing play by play, one person doing color, just like in real sports. But here he's doing everything and he's doing everything so well with a personality. Like when the clips we have on here of him losing his temper at people are like, they're like, oh man, Ed Whalen, like he's lost it, but they're still like in the character that he's been doing the whole time. It's just it is as incredible to me as like any wrestling moves that people are able to do that.
Well, I like that there's the one match, I think it's the first one with Dynamite Kid and Fujinami. I just wanted to make sure I got that right. So yeah, Fujinami and Dynamite Kid. And Dynamite Kid has, I believe, J.R. Foley's managing him. And he like at one point kind of gets on commentary and Ed Whalen's like pissed off about it. Like he's like, ladies and gentlemen, ignore that voice in the background. That's just the prick J.R. Foley's trying to get in my ear while I'm trying to commentate this match. And to be frank, it's pissing me off. I don't like him very much. And like that, I thought that was so funny. And the one where he gets handcuffed to the manager, like that's also one of the dumbest stipulations I think I've ever heard. Because usually in wrestling lore, the announcers are sort of thought of as these sort of meek, you know, they can't wrestle. They're just like a regular
Joe. They scurry out of the way when somebody comes.
Exactly.
Them,
So the idea that you would take a wrestling manager and in order to prevent them from interfering in the match, you would handcuff them to the wimpy announcer rather than like chain them to the steel barricade or the ring post or something. It's like, no, I got to handcuff them to the wimpy announcer. That made me laugh too.
I love the pro wrestling solution of, well, we don't want this guy to cause trouble during this, so we're going to attach him to another person. That'll help.
Like, can we watch the 1 minute long one? I think it's just Ed Whalen gets pissed off.
Yes.
Just to give the listeners an idea.
A little taste.
Oh God.
Give me a second.
Yep.
Am I wrong in saying that real sports would be improved by having an Ed Whalen type on the mic? If there was somebody who's
get this
producer the fuck out of my ear. Like I'm talking here, like 19's going off ice. Jim in the truck is pissing me off and I don't like him personally. Like why do we not have this? Why real sports really have some lessons to learn from the world of professional wrestling. And I think we'll get there.
Yeah. I feel like the closest equivalent is Joe Rogan in the UFC.
Sure.
Like, yeah.
Like, because he used to be like a genuinely good commentator as well. He's kind of lost his mind, and he's just like, he's been passed by like former fighters who are now doing commentary mm-hmm. that know more about MMA than Joe. Like, or in the earlier days, Joe was a good commentator and also knew a lot about MMA, and he's, that part of him is slipping a little bit, but there still is something to like Joe Rogan being like, oh my God,
the moment
when someone gets like knocked out. And certainly I would love that in hockey also.
Yeah just like some excitement, some dynamism, you know?
Totally.
All right, let's go.
The Browns, it's a proven fact, from Jim the Anvil Neidhart to Stu Hart to Bret Hart to Owen Hart, now to Bruce Hart. He got, listen, don't get your hands off me. Don't you think me.
You know, this is a disgusting scene, and it could get out of hand. But he's got no business coming out here.
It's fine. He's the promoter. He's in charge of this operation. He's in charge.
Your whole family.
Just like your son.
Why did you have your son refereeing in there today? You know he's suspended.
Get out. I don't want to listen to you. Yeah.
Just a minute.
Get out of here.
Just a minute.
Get out of here. We'll be right back.
He's so mad. Pro.
It's so good.
We'll be right back.
God, I love that.
That's pro. That's so pro right there. I just love too that, yeah, so what's happening there is Stu Hart, the actual owner of Stampede Wrestling and founder of it, is the one who is fighting with this wrestler. They're arguing with this wrestler. And I do love that he's like, he has no right to be here. And Ed Whalen just very correctly points out, like, he owns this all.
Boss.
He can be wherever the fuck he wants.
And it's such obvious information to Ed that he's pissed off that he has to explain it to this Rube. He's like, he's the promoter. Like, it's just the absolute best.
Oh, it's
laying
so
down
good.
The law. Did he? So he's, I mean, by the end of his run, based on these clips, I'm imagining he was pretty old. Did he do anything after Stampede?
So
nobody
was,
in wrestling ever retires, so I'm assuming he was doing.
He was
stuff.
Actually like a proper commentator. He also commentated hockey.
Oh, cool!
So this was just like he just loved wrestling, so he just also did this.
That's right.
But he's actually like a real broadcaster. I was looking up some information about him earlier.
He did commentary for the Flames, didn't he?
He did commentary for the Calgary Flames. And so yeah, his nickname was Waylon Ed. Which was indicative
Makes
of
sense.
His famous nasal announcing voice. He took a part-time job in broadcasting, and then he was the news and sports director for Calgary TV. He started with Stampede Wrestling, and then he moved on to the Flames and started commentating for the Flames in 1980. And he did that through into the 90s. And then when he retired from broadcasting, he had a weekly column in the Calgary Sun newspaper.
I bet it was great. I bet he had a lot of bones to pick.
I bet he did too.
Apparently he was up until his time passing like a living legend in Calgary. Like the city just absolutely adored
Hometown
him from
hero.
What I understand. And it's funny you say that his nickname Waylon Ed is from his nasally voice. I don't know if you know this, John. It's also his name flipped backwards and forwards. It's an unbelievable coincidence.
Waylon Ed Waylon. it's pretty badass, you know.
It rocks. I love you.
So,
rest in peace, King.
It definitely rocks.
R.I.P. I have a general question about this. So
sure.
I know this was like, because I was looking a little bit at the Wikipedia page, this was like a very early example of a nationally televised wrestling pro, because like in the territories in the U.S., it was like you would, whatever your local channel was, you would get the wrestling from your region and that was it. But from what I understand, this was all of Canada got this, at least for a while. Is that correct?
Exactly right. So for a while, it was the only Canadian cable federation. Mm-hmm. But then Pacific North Wrestling, PNW, started to carry. I think they actually ended up signing this is so in the weeds, I don't know if it's worth getting into, but the NWA title away from Calgary. So the NWA Canada title went to the PNW Wrestling. And meanwhile, Stampede Wrestling launched their heavyweight title, whatever it is. I think it's called, Dan, do you have it handy? It's like the North American heavyweight title.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
And John, a fun fact for you, Randy Myers, who we've seen many times at our very own Commodore Ballroom, the final heavyweight champion of Stampede Wrestling, the guy who retired their belt. So there you go.
Nice. Mm. Love
the
him.
Only other thing,
Ravenous Randy.
Ravenous Randy.
The only other thing, like when I think about Canadian wrestling, especially Canadian territory wrestling, I watched an interview with Kenny Omega once, Edmonton, right? Yeah.
Winnipeg.
Yep. Yeah, he and a bunch of like Barracos from Winnipeg, Don, all those people. But he was saying he came up kind of post Stampede when it was like definitely either totally defunct or on the downswing. And he was doing these regional shows where it was like they could only drive up in the winter when the ice was frozen.
Yeah.
To like up to do these like, like middle of nowhere places. And like they were in these piece of shit vans that would like break down in the fucking tundra. Like,
no thanks.
It just, yeah. Canadian wrestling post Stampede sounded very dark. Like, pretty grim.
A couple of wrestlers died doing that tour over the years.
Yeah. Would not be surprised. It sounded terrible.
Yeah. Well, do you know, Dan, offhand, if it was from the lake melting while they were driving or was it unrelated?
No, I think Edge and Christian, when they were doing that tour, almost drove into a hole in a massive lake.
Holy hell.
Wow.
That would have been horrible. Yeah, Christian would have passed away.
It's like, oh, are you one of the best up and coming wrestlers in this country? Go to the Arctic.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. So crazy. Yeah,
I think Canadian wrestling, like a lot of Canadian art forms, it you end up at some point having to do dangerous driving to play a room full of 30 people. Yeah. And it just seems like a depressing grind. I admire anyone who, like Kenny Omega, who you bring up, who ended up,
Thank you.
And our very own John Cullen. I don't know if you guys know this. Block Party, a pretty successful podcast. Stefan and John, you're pretty, you know, these guys.
I am a Canadian entertainer, so.
Well, to some. you're my friend. I don't think you're like my Canadian entertainer. You're my pal.
I mean, that would be so weird if I was like at your house for a gathering or something and I'm meeting someone for the first time and you're like, this is Canadian entertainer John. Yeah,
this guy's driven over frozen lakes. Like, you're gonna want to show him some respect.
I do think too, though, one thing that you sort of bringing up that about Canada, you know, I think part of why a lot of our entertainers are actually like some of the best in their respective fields. And I think that's certainly true of Canadians as well. I think you could make the case that Chris Jericho is one of the best to ever do it.
He's my favorite of all time.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Certainly Lance Storm is up there for sure, as well as being a fantastic wrestler and other Canadians throughout history, in obviously Owen Hart too, and Brett. And I think it is part of the, like, you kind of almost have to get into it for the love of it, because there's no guarantee of success in Canada. And like being a stand-up in Vancouver, like obviously there are people who get into stand-up because they think it's going to make them famous. Like that's the only reason that they start doing stand-up, is because they think, oh, this is it. But it honestly is, for the most part, people just are kind of getting into it for the love of it, because they know, like, even if you get famous in Canada, that's not like you're rich. Like you're doing well, you're comfortable.
You can
but
do
like
okay,
some of the biggest comedians in Canada. I mean, it's not like they're retiring to their Forest Hills mansions.
They're not even
in Toronto. Like, yeah, exactly. Seriously, like in some, genuinely, like it's just, so I do think that contributes to it a little bit, is that you just have these people who want the thing so bad that they have to become so good, because a lot of times you're grinding for so long before you get any notoriety as well. So I think that's part of it too, is it's that sort of buildup of, okay, I gotta build myself up before anyone even knows who I am. And the way to do that is to go to these cold cities and travel all across this massive country and whatever else. So
I also think there's something to be said, because what you're saying reminds me a lot. I do. So I started in Texas. I live in New York, but I'm originally from New England, like Northeast US. And I've done a lot of shows in Portland, Maine, and which is a small city. It's like a pretty like sort of politically progressive place, but it's the, you know, Maine is an extremely rural state and it's deceptively big. And the comics I was seeing there, I was really impressed by. Like, for a scene that big, I was like, wow, you guys are all like really good. And they're like, well, we play for these sort of like cosmopolitan crowds in Portland, but to get any other work, we have to drive like 4 hours to like potato farm country up north and entertain those people. And they like, you know, they're a tough crowd and they like completely different stuff and it makes them really good. And I think that's what you get when you, you know, in Canada, you guys seem like you travel way farther to do one-nighters than Americans will. And you go to these small towns that are, you know, culturally not like Vancouver and you have to make it work. And that gives you the versatility and also the, yeah, like you sort of put your hours in on that grind. And I think it makes you better and like much, much more able to like adapt to different situations than somebody who's, you know, a hothouse flower who only performs in the big city.
Yeah. I mean, like I'll fly to do gigs in towns of like 2,000 people. Like that's kind of like, cause they're that far away where you're like, well, I'm not going to drive there. But there's enough people there that want to do a show or whatever. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. Any last words about Stampede before we get into Canadian trivia?
I would, if I could put a bow on it, just about
wrap it up.
Like it's now defunct, but it is still Canada's best kick at the can and our best offering to the pro wrestling world. And I think it's important because of that. And I'm so thankful that you guys are teaching people about it and being like, hey, you know, we had something to offer here too. And so while it was sold to me as, and I think this was Stu Hart's vision, was to be a mix of more of the Japanese influence, serious up competitive wrestling and the westernized sort of, I mean, it's gone much further now, but to Stuart at the time, sensationalized, flashy style. It was sold to me as sort of a marriage of those two things. And I don't know if it especially delivered on that, but I do think it's worthwhile. I think it's important. And if you look up and down who held their belt and who was in and out of those roster doors, I think that we as Canadians have, you know, something we can stand on top of and be proud of in the great business of professional wrestling.
Well said.
Hell yeah. I mean, wow. Well
that's,
said.
That's the wrestling brain right there, Josh Custodio. Great finish to a great learning experience.
Can I just say that I think we should do a helmet match, John?
Patreon goal helmet match.
It has to be.
I need to see this. Please make this happen.
I'm certainly down to do any sort of fight against you.
But I feel like this is the one fight where I might have an advantage because I think my head is actually head bigger size. And harder than yours.
I don't think your head is bigger than mine.
No, I think
what's
it
your
is.
Hat size?
Let me look it up. I remember,
guys,
I feel
only
like,
one way to find out. Why are you giving away the goods? Let's be like,
I know, this is how you promote a match.
No, that's true.
Come on.
Yeah, sorry, you're right. You're right. Yeah. You're right. If you were, if this was porno, you wouldn't say how long is your dick. How long
exactly.
is your dick? You would show. You would be like, exactly. You pull out the measuring tape. Yeah, you're right. Okay, so
you'd say if you want to see this big, who has the biggest, most giant dick, you have to buy this porno, which is
that's our Patreon.
So that'll be Stefan and ours and mine's like pre-fight press conference instead of a weigh-in we get our head measured.
I love this idea.
Whatever, a little brain damage for the fans never hurt anybody.
We've given them enough, so
that's true.
Somebody that's a in a fair full exchange. Commission suit with like a ruler around your heads announcing it's 22 and a half for Cullen. I need to see this.
We'll do it. All right, well, this is the end of the show. We're going to end all of these Canadian episodes with a Canadian quiz, where Stefan and Josh and Kath will all participate in a Canadian quiz. You're going to get two easy questions, two medium questions, and two hard questions. The easy questions are worth one each. Medium are worth two. Hard are worth three. So you can write the answer down on your phone, or if you have a pen or paper, we'll do the questions one at a time, just so I know you're not cheating. So just to put it in perspective, Kath, last month we had Lydia Burrell, our good friend, or Howell Doughty on the show, and he scored one. He got one point.
Let's see if I can get a new low score.
Yeah, so we'll see how you stack up to both Stefan and Josh, and we'll see how you stack up to LB and his performance last month. Okay, so is everybody ready for this? Okay, so these are the two easy questions. So this is question number one. 94.6% of which Canadian province reports to have knowledge of French?
Okay. I'm locked in.
Can we have a hint?
is everyone locked in?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Kath, we'll start with you. What did you say?
I put you guys say Quebec, right? Isn't that how you say
Quebec,
it?
Yeah.
Quebec, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, Quebec.
And Josh?
Yeah, I also have Quebec.
Nice. And Stefan?
I said Quebec.
All right. Wonderful. So that is everyone's on the board. 1 point each.
I'm so excited.
You've already tied LB, Kath. This is, you're on track for a record performance. Okay.
Amazing.
Question number two, also in the easy category. What is the capital of Quebec?
You literally the only place in Canada I have ever been.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, then that's great.
No, actually, I've been to, well, I don't want to say because I don't want anyone to, you know.
Yeah, you know, don't give anything away, Kath. Yeah, don't give anything away here.
All right.
Everyone locked in?
Yep.
Kath will again start with you.
Quebec City.
Josh?
Am I wrong?
I also wrote Quebec City.
Stefan?
Quebec City.
That is correct. Everybody's right. Once again, across the board, 2-2-2. Very well done.
That was okay, funny because so you're thinking Montreal for a moment, you know?
Yeah, well, and it's that's the trick, tricky. Right? Some people think Toronto's the capital of Canada for that exact reason, and that's LB being one of them last week, not realizing it's Ottawa. Okay, so now we're into the medium questions. Here we go. So this is the first medium difficulty question. The United States of America celebrates their Independence Day on July 4th. When does Canada celebrate theirs?
Locked in.
And now this isn't, I will give a hint, it's not an Independence Day because of a war. This is just when the country was founded on this date that we celebrate.
I'm locked in.
Yep.
Kath?
I'm locked in.
All right. Kath, what's your guess?
Based on your hint, I'm just going full on New Year's Day.
Okay. We waited for the calendar to turn over and we were like, this is it.
Be patient. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got July 1.
And Stefan?
July 1st.
That's correct. Canada Day, our official Independence Day, is just 3 days before the United States on July 1st. So we've got Josh and Stefan at 4 points each. Kath, you're still stuck on two. here we go. This is actually related to this week's episode. This is the second medium question. We spent the entire episode talking about Stampede Wrestling, which is named after the Calgary Stampede, a rodeo event. The building that the Stampede is housed in has which distinctive shape? I can read that again if you want. We spent this entire episode talking about Stampede Wrestling, which is named after the Calgary Stampede, a rodeo event. The building that the Stampede is housed in has which distinctive shape?
I'm locked in.
Okay. Kath, you locked in? All right.
I'm in.
Your guess. You're up first.
I'm thinking, I got fights on the brain. I'm going octagon.
Octagon. Okay. Good. Good guess. Josh?
I don't even know if this is a shape. I wrote dome.
Okay.
Saddle.
So Josh and Stefan are kind of both correct, but what I was looking for was Stefan's answer. It is shaped like a saddle. It is the saddle dome.
Oh, so, I thought that was just a bit. Sure. I thought you were doing a good bit about rodeos.
It's literally shaped like a saddle. Josh, I'll give you 1 point for writing dome because I realized
my
question.
It feels like it has to be a dome shape as well, right?
But it's very distinctively shaped like a saddle. I mean, that's if you know anything
it's
about the Stampede,
the
you know that.
That's why I didn't say dome, because I was like, every stadium is kind of shaped like a dome.
It seems safe. All right. I'll take the one point.
Okay. So Stefan sporting a perfect score so far at 6. Kath still at 2. Josh is at 3.
Stefan, how did you do on the last one?
Sorry. Josh is at 5, I should say.
How did I do
Stefan
on the last
one? Stefan got 7 on the last one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we're into the hard questions. These are both worth 3 points each. Canada's official winter sport is hockey. What is their official summer sport?
Okay. I'm locked in.
Okay. Kath, you too?
Yeah.
All right,
sorry.
We'll start with Kath.
I know you guys aren't a showy people, but I feel like you could do some cool flips. So I'm going to say diving.
Diving. That's a good guess. We do actually have some good divers in this country. Yep. Josh?
I wrote summer hockey. No, lacrosse.
Stefan?
I also wrote lacrosse.
That is the correct answer. Lacrosse is the official Canadian summer sport. So now we have Stefan still sporting a perfect score. Josh is 1 point behind him and Kath is still stuck on 2.
That's so interesting because I feel like in America, lacrosse has a very un-Canadian reputation. It's kind of a preppy, sort of fratty thing here.
So lacrosse is actually technically Canada's official sport. And then we just got so good at hockey and cared so much about it that people were like, how is hockey not our official sport? So now we do the very wussy move of having a official winter sport and official summer sport. Okay, final question. We were talking actually about Kenny Omega in this episode and where he is from. Winnipeg is Manitoba's most populous city with a population of 705,000. Its second most populous city ranks very far behind it, clocking in at only 48,800 people. What is the second most populous city in Manitoba? I'll read that again. Winnipeg is Manitoba's most populous city with a population of 705,000. Its second most populous city ranks way behind Winnipeg, clocking in at only 48,800 people. What is Manitoba's second most populous city?
I'm locked in.
Me too, I guess.
Stefan looks like he's in the tank. He wants the perfect score.
I'm thinking of like WHL teams to try and get like.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah.
Okay. I think I got a guess because it's the only other city I've thought of. So,
all right.
Hopefully that's the right one.
Kath, we'll let you go first.
It's cold there. I said Ice Town.
It's a good guess.
That's Manitoba. Great guess. A lot of people don't know this, but because it is so cold here, most of our cities are called Ice Town.
That's true.
So that's very good. Josh, what was your guess?
I got Winnipeg Junior.
And Stefan,
I guess Brandon Wheat Kings. That's the only other town I could think of.
So when you said that you were choosing WHL teams, I thought to myself, very smart strategy by Stefan, because the correct answer is Brandon, Manitoba.
Wow.
The only other one I was going with was Flin Flon, which I feel
Flin Flon is much smaller than Brandon. I think third is Dauphin, maybe, if I had to guess. I didn't really look super close, but let me take a look here. This is just how pathetic Manitoba is.
Sorry, what was that WHL team name?
Brandon
Wheat Kings.
Wheat Kings.
Oh, so Steinbach is actually the third most populous with 15,800. Thompson is fourth with 13,000.
I feel like I've heard of that maybe. I might be thinking of Thompson Rivers though, which is a different place.
I didn't even realize, like, I feel like I'm a little biased because I've curled a lot in Manitoba, so I know a lot of these cities because they house curling tournaments, but like the 10th most populous city in Manitoba only has 5,000 people.
Oh my God.
What?
Yeah, so Flin Flon is 11th, Stefan. They're at 4,982.
Flin Flon.
Brandon, it goes Brandon, Steinbach, Thompson, Portage La Prairie, Winkler, Selkirk, Morden, Dauphin, The Paz, Flin Flon, and then a reservation is the number 12, and it's just called Norway House 17.
Never.
Well, because the only things I know about Manitoba are number one, the weekend song, Weaker Than song about Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And then wrestlers. And then the other thing I know about it is there are a lot of First Nations people there. So I was like, I'm not going to offensively try to guess a Native American city name.
Well, it's just funny to me but it just is so weird that it's just called Norway House 17, that they wouldn't have like a, you know, they won't allow them to name it something way cooler than that.
So how big is Brandon? How many people?
So Brandon's 48,000. So Winnipeg is 705,000. Brandon's 48,000. Okay. But then third, it immediately goes down to 15,000.
That's insane. So oh my God.
And I'm assuming all those places are like hours apart from each other.
Yeah. Brandon's fairly close to Winnipeg. I think it's about an hour and a half. But then, Steinbeck is number three. And I think it's about 8 hours from Winnipeg.
I've never heard of that town.
The only reason I've heard of it is because there's a very good women's curler from there. Oh, never mind. Steinbeck's only 49 minutes away. I thought it was much further.
I learned a lot on this episode about
Thompson was the one I was thinking of. There's a curler from Thompson, Kate Cameron, and it's 7 hours and 40 minutes away from Winnipeg. So
good grief.
What a country we live in. So the final scores ended up being Stefan at 12, Josh at 8, and Kath at 2. So Kath, you are currently the highest scorer on the Canadian education program.
You doubled podcasters. LB. You kicked
it.
Doubled LB. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Before we go, is there anything you'd like to plug?
Yes, please. I do a podcast called What a Time to Be Alive, which both of these Block Party hosts have been on. And I think you just did another bonus episode with my other co-host. So
we
I don't
did,
know if that's
yes.
out
That'll
yet,
be out but... next. It'll be out next Wednesday. So we're kind of doing a little What a Time to Be Alive week. We've got
you,
this Wednesday, and then next Wednesday we have your co-hosts Patty and Eli on for
it's
Trivia Party.
Hell yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Correction. 2 weeks.
Yeah. What do you mean?
But I don't know. It's what Dan said.
What are you talking about, Dan?
That's two separate weeks.
Well, yeah, it's What a Time to Be Alive week. The week starts on Wednesday. And
yeah,
then
so it goes Wednesday to Wednesday.
Wednesday.
That's still a week.
That's a week apart.
I guess that's a, yeah, I guess.
It's 7 days.
I'm kind of with Dan. Those are two separate weeks, though. You got the one week and then the next week.
Wednesday. Well,
what a Time to Be Alive 2 weeks doesn't sound nearly as good. So.
Well, that's
as a member of this podcast, I would like more time. So I will go with Dan. But yeah, so if you like this and you like that, check our podcast out. What a Time Pod on social media. It comes out every week. And then I have another podcast called Lie, Cheat, and Steal. We actually have a wrestling themed episode coming up on our free feed. So Lie, Cheat, and Steal is a true crime podcast about liars, frauds, thieves, and bullshitters. And our upcoming free feed episode is about Jeff Jarrett, who is one of the carniest pro wrestlers of all time. So
Double J.
Yeah. So definitely check that out. We do two free episodes and two Patreon only episodes a month for that. And if you happen to live in New York and are listening to this to learn about Canada, follow me on Twitter. I will be posting stand-up dates. So yeah, thank you for having
me. Awesome. And you're at Kath Barbadoro on Twitter, correct?
That's right.
Wonderful. And Josh, thank you so much as well for joining us. Great to have your wrestling brain, as it were, on the show. Is there anything that you would like to plug as well?
Yes, thanks so much for having me. And Kath, I'll definitely be tuning into that Double J couple episodes. That sounds awesome to me. Yeah, I do Wednesday nights, the moment AEW Dynamite ends. You can head on over to twitch.tv/wrestlingbrain. These Zoobs and I recap the show, review it, take your calls. If you suck, we'll hang up on you. But if you're good, you can come chat with us. It'll be great. And yeah, on Thursdays, I do my podcast, Your Bad Childhood. We review nostalgia items under a modern lens with the gorgeous Matt Prince. And yeah, that's it for me. Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
Oh, our pleasure. Awesome. People can follow Josh on Twitter at Josh C, and the Josh the O is a zero. So
that's true.
J0SHC. Give Josh a follow. And I feel like Kath and Josh, you know, Kath, I think Wrestling Brain could use your brain as well. I feel like we've
Absolutely.
Maybe made a little guest match
yeah,
here.
No question. You know.
Yeah. I'm going to call in. I'm for sure going to call in.
Please do.
Usually by the time Dynamite's over, I'm a little drunk, so it'll be fun.
We are
too. Perfect. Yeah.
call in during Double or Nothing weekend. We'll get you on in a big spot. It'll be a blast.
Hell yeah. Thanks.
There you go. Beautiful. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Thanks for tuning in and donating to the show. We appreciate it. We love you. And we will see you back here very, very soon with the next episode of this stupid show and many others. And we also, if you're, you know, haven't heard already, this weekend, this Saturday, May 29th, coming up, we've got another BP live show. Fan favorite Adam Christie is going to be joining us to review some terrible cameos in another edition of Word Up. So look out for that. It's going to be a blast. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.